3. To my surprise, there were something like 15 airports spread out on the African island country. Unfortunately, I didn't see any of them from our current vantage point. The engine sputtered as we neared land, and Veronica grinned as she lowered toward the bare ground. Seated beside the pilot, I listened as the dash alarms chimed out repeatedly. The gauge dials were pushing their limits, but none of it seemed to discourage Veronica.
"What the hell were we thinking?"
Hunter shouted, and I peered at him. He was whiter than a ghost and clutched the seatbelt tightly. The plane was a stark contrast to the ones he was used to traveling in. The seats were cracked, the paint chipped, but so far, they'd managed to cross the gulf between Mozambique and Madagascar, if only by a hair.
"You worry too much," Veronica said into her headset.
Trip had remained quiet, and Marcus seemed pensive. His eyes pressed closed as his lips moved silently. I suspected he'd just found religion. A voice carried through her radio, speaking in crackling French. She responded and gave me a thumbs up as she steered the plane south.
"We're cleared for landing." "What, you didn't think I was going to touch down on the rocks, did you? They do have laws, Rex."
The plane jerked to the side, sending me into Veronica.
"Hands to yourself," she smirked,
and I found myself liking the woman more and more with each quip. She was easy to look at, not to mention carefree in a way I'd never managed in my life. The airport looked like a few others I'd stopped in over the years. A single ratty tower, a lone runway with a few rusted-out planes parked outside a chain-link fence. There was a narrow road between the water and the tarmac, and she headed for it, descending faster than any of us liked. We each sat in a kind of petrified state as the wheels touched the pavement, bouncing up, then screeching on the strip as she leveled it out. We jerked sideways several times and finally slowed, the engines cutting out as she directed the plane toward a man in an orange vest, waving his batons.
"Told you, smooth sailing,"
Veronica said as she powered off the plane.
"I've never,"
Hunter started, but I cut him off. "You got us here, thank you." I unstrapped, and she gave me an appreciative grin. Trip opened the exit, and Marcus was the first out, landing on wobbly feet.
"I'm never getting in there again."
"Maybe not, but I bet it won't be your last hectic ride," I told him. The air was humid, but a far cry from being as hot as the harsh terrain in the outback, and I took the offered bags from Trip. I hadn't asked him what was inside his, but judging by the heaviness of it, there were a few guns and God knows what else.
"Bonjour, bienvenue à Madagascar," the man said in fluent French.
"Thank you," I replied.
"This way," he said in English.
A few men watched us from the main building, leaning in the shade and staring with curiosity at our strange group. Hunter Madison was the last to disembark, and he looked like he was on death's doorstep.
"You sure you can do this?"
I asked quietly. Trip and Veronica were ahead, with Marcus a few feet behind, lugging another pack. Hunter's eyes were lively, and he managed a smile.
"Rex, I've been waiting to see a token for 30 years. If it's where those coordinates say it is, I'd make that flight 50 times over.
He took off, moving spryly, and I jogged after him. We followed the local airport attendant to the fence, and I watched as a white truck drove by, exhaust billowing from the tailpipe. The town was across the street. It spread across the beige landscape, a few baobab trees jutting from the ground around the region. An animal screamed, and I spotted a lemur on a tree branch, his ringed tail drooping behind him.
"How do you know the guide?"
I asked Hunter, and he motioned to a truck across the road as we exited the airport. He didn't respond. Trip stopped near the first escort and slipped him some currency before grabbing his pack again and crossing the road. There were two men at the truck, one with a green shirt, the other in an orange one. Each wore black shorts.
"Bonjour,"
Hunter said.
"Is everything prepared?"
Green shirt nodded. He set a hand on his chest.
"I am Haja. This is Hassin."
"Well met,"
Hunter said and gave them our names. Their eyes lingered on Marcus for a moment, then on Veronica.
"There's no time like the present. Let's make a move," I said, chucking the packs in the back of the truck.
"Would you like to ride up front with me?"
Haja asked Veronica, and she was quick to respond.
"Hunter, it would be much more comfortable for you up there."
"Right, then it's settled.
Hunter started for the door and stopped.
Marcus, give Hadja the coordinates.
Marcus glanced at me, seeking guidance, and I answered for him. Get us near the northern region. You can do that, right? Hadja nodded quickly.
Not a problem.
I climbed into the back of the truck, sitting on the wooden bench. I tucked my pack under it, and Veronica came beside me. You'll get the last coordinates when we arrive safely, I told them. I couldn't risk giving away the location of our first token, not to strangers. For all I knew, they'd relay the information to friends already waiting at the Stone Forest. To activate the bridge, we needed all six of the relics, though we currently only had the accurate locations of five of them. Trip was the last to climb in, and he sat heavily, putting himself between Marcus and Hassin. The engine cranked, shaking the entire truck, and Hadja started forward, easing his foot on the pedal.
This might be a little bumpy, he said through the open window between us.
The sun was high and hot, and Hassin opened a cooler, kicking it across the truck bed toward the center. There were six bottles of water, along with a bunch of green bottled beers. Trip took one of those and snapped the cap off on the edge of the old truck. He offered it to me, and I shook my head.
I'll have one,
Veronica said, and took it from Trip. He found another while Marcus and I settled for water.
How long is the drive?
Trip asked Hassin. 3 hours, he said.
Damn, I'll admit I've been on worse roads in Madagascar, but not many. But rarely did we have refreshments like this.
Trip lifted the beer and gulped from it. I hadn't been here before, so I didn't know what to expect. But I learned quickly enough. We drove through town, and I watched as a group of children were led out of school. They shouted and ran from the whitewashed building, dashing for their daily dose of freedom. 10 minutes later, houses became exceedingly sparse along the roads, and the trees grew thicker. We passed only a handful of cars on the road, fewer the farther inland we went. Judging by the sun and the maps Marcus and I had reviewed, we were heading southeast toward the Stone Forest. I'd seen pictures before, but we weren't going to the tourist location with public washrooms and guided tours. Have you seen Madagascar before? I asked Veronica.
Sure, a couple times. Stone Forest is quite the sight, but not for everyone. Tends to be dangerous. Between the suspension bridge and the rock climbing, it can be a bit of a test, she said. What can you tell me about our prize?
I glanced at Hassin, but he and Trip were in conversation and on their second beer. I kept my voice quiet.
There's an artifact located inside, something valuable.
It would have to be with Hunter Madison chasing after it. I didn't think anyone lived out there in the forest. Are you suggesting there's an ancient village? She asked.
I can't know for sure, but this isn't the original location of the artifact, I admitted. This piqued her interest.
How interesting. So these six stops we're planning on making, did someone spread out a collection or something?
She was smart. I had to give her that. Along those lines. The truck lurched, and I peered over the front of the vehicle. The sun was bright, and I struggled to see why Hadja would stop in the middle of nowhere. Hassin rose, jumping from the truck, and Trip followed him.
I sense trouble,
Marcus said, pointing down the road, and then I saw the other vehicles. The lead one stopped 100 yards away, pulled sideways to block the road. Three men hopped out, hardly more than boys, but I didn't like the look of them.
Toss my pack,
Trip called from the rear of our truck, and I threw it over, the bag landing with a hefty thump. He unzipped it, shoving a handgun into his belt behind his back. What's going on? I asked Hadja through the window.
Stay put. I will deal with this. Mr. Madison, do you have any arrieri?
He asked Hunter. It took me a second to remember that was their local currency.
Some. What do you need? Who are these men?
Hadja sighed.
They control the passes. Any hunting is done so with their permission.
Hunting? I whispered, and it all clicked. I opened a crate near the window and found 3 long rifles along with sacks. They're poachers. What do you hunt? Hadja shrugged and told me.
Lemurs.
You hired poachers to bring us in?
I asked Hunter, and he frowned at me.
How else did you expect to get to the illegal passes of the conservation region? We do what's necessary to complete our mission, he stated firmly.
Hadja opened his door and climbed out, taking the envelope with arrieri bills with him.
I can't believe this, Marcus said. Do you see the heat they're packing?
I did now. Two of the men opposite us were carrying submachine guns, and I flinched, picturing this ending in a shootout. I glanced into Tripp's pack and spotted an M240. I quickly closed it and caught Veronica eyeing it suspiciously.
Some friends you have, Rex,
she whispered. You're telling me. Haja and Hussein met a skinny older man halfway, the two machine guns close behind him. I noted how Tripp stood beside Hunter's door protectively. It was clear who he was hired to shield. Not that I blamed him. The team was being paid handsomely for this mission, even if they didn't understand what the end goal was. Haja handed the other guy the bills, and he smiled, sniffing the cash. He barked an order, and his escorts turned around, lowering their weapons. I relaxed, glad the meeting hadn't ended in violence. But the old guy didn't follow his friends. He was staring at the truck. He asked something else in a clipped dialect I couldn't quite hear from my position. He pointed at us and started walking forward. Judging by Haja's expression, he was worried about something.
Tripp, what do we do?
Marcus asked him. Tripp didn't take his eyes off the incoming man.
Have you ever fired a gun?
No. Well, yes, but only at the range with Rex.
Rex, in my pack, there are two P226s. Take one, give Marcus.
Veronica already had one in her hand. She released the magazine and slapped her palm on the end, clicking it back in place. She spun the other around and passed it to me.
Don't worry, I won't shoot myself in the foot.
This was a weapon I was familiar with, and it gave me confidence as I waited, still sitting in the box of the truck. The skinny guy Haja had paid off was closer, and he whistled, catching the attention of his armed escorts. They both turned around, lifting their guns, and I saw Tripp stand straighter. He was prepared for anything. He started to reach for his gun when I overheard the man speaking in French. One of their tires is low, give them a hand. I translated it in my head, but Tripp clearly didn't speak the language. I climbed past Marcus and hopped to the ground, leaving the SIG behind. I was right on time. I told him what they said as Tripp started to swing his arm around and he stopped, turning to face me.
Are you sure?
They're changing the tire. Hunter was still inside the truck, and at my words, he exited, stretching his back.
As good a time as any for a quick break, don't you think?
He asked, dabbing sweat with his handkerchief. The armed guards set their weapons on the dirt track and glanced at their boss, who nodded and pointed to the low tire. He grunted something about earning their share and laughed with Haja. Our escorts seemed nervous at first, but were warming up. They pulled a tire from beside the bench Veronica and I had been seated on and made quick work of the swap. Once the jack was lowered, the skinny man whispered something to Hussein and walked off, whistling while his two companions shuffled after him. Haja returned to the driver's seat and waited while the two vehicles drove by us with a honk of the horn. How close was that? I asked Hussein as he sat across from me.
You never know with him, but he's interested in money, and we give him good business.
That was the end of it, and the truck started up. We continued on toward the ever-thickening jungle ahead. By 5 o'clock, the sun was behind the canopy of trees, and we drove on for another hour, until it was almost impossible to make out the rough jungle passing. I wondered if this trail had been physically cut by local poachers over the years, or if some part of it was natural. Lemurs called out everywhere, and they were an eerie soundtrack to the journey. I'd never seen so many as they sat in treetops, nimbly moving between branches with ease. Their voices intermingled with bird songs, and I searched the surroundings for the source, unable to spot any feathered friends in the dark. Marcus stared at the lemurs, his interest in the exotic animals waning after hours seated on the uncomfortable wooden bench. I felt his pain and banged a palm against the truck as Haja began pulling off the road.
"What's the plan? I thought we were getting there today."
"No, we cannot go on without light. Too dangerous."
"Great," Marcus mumbled.
"Buck up. A night in the jungle never killed."
Tripp stopped.
"Well, that's not true, but if you're stuck outside, there are worse places in the world to be. I was in Mosquitia 20 years ago looking for the White City with some foolhardy intellectual type."
"And what happened?"
"Damn snake killed our doctor. Can you believe it?"
Tripp grinned, and Marcus glanced at the nearby bushes.
We hauled out of the truck, retrieving our supplies. The trees opened up to a clearing, and I stared at the darkening sky, watching the pinpricks of light blink to life.
"What happened after the snake bite?"
Veronica asked him.
I never did reach the city. Only a complete lunatic would bother. Trip glanced at a skittering sound from the trees.
You have to be slightly mad to scour a jungle in search of a lost city, don't you?
Veronica prodded. Sure, I'd agree with that.
And the expedition?
The man that hired us died 2 weeks in. We warned him to wear his snake gaiters, but he whined that they chafed his ankles. Trip didn't have to finish the story. I glanced at my feet and into the jungle, and hurried after the two locals as they led us into the clearing.
We stay here. Put the tents close together,
Hassin said.
Can we have a fire?
Marcus asked.
Yes. There are predators, but we don't have much to worry from the fossa.
Haja started to unroll a tarp.
What's a fossa?
Hunter surprised me by answering.
Kind of a cross between a cat and a hyena. They mainly eat lemurs, which means they're in direct competition with our guides, aren't they?
It was a passive-aggressive dig at their choice of career paths, but he was the one who'd hired them knowing that.
And snakes?
Veronica asked as she built her pup tent.
There are lots, but don't fear, pretty lady,
Haja said.
They don't like people much.
Good, because I don't like them,
Marcus replied. We were experienced with our equipment, and camp was erected within minutes. Hassin had the fire going soon after, and we rolled a set of fallen logs over, making seats as the flames licked the sky. It was peaceful, with the sounds of the region shifting from daytime to those of night. It was a different world in the dark, like a shift change on a factory floor. Trip brought out a supply of dried meat and nuts, and we ate. Hassin left, and I eyed him suspiciously, but he returned in a few minutes with the cooler from the back of the truck. He'd refilled it with more beer from somewhere, and now I accepted his offering. The nights were cooler, and I was thankful for the heat of the fire as I sipped the bitter brew.
Tomorrow,
Hunter's gaze was affixed to the sky.
How far?
The edge of the forest is near. 2 hours, maybe,
Haja answered as he poked the burning logs with a stick. Ashes shot into the air and the fire crackled.
From there, that depends on the location.
Marcus, I think we can share that with them now, don't you?
Hunter asked my sidekick. Only the two of us held the actual coordinates as part of our deal, and when Marcus looked to me for leadership, I nodded. He pulled his phone out and handed it to Haja beside him on the log.
This is in a restricted region. We already assumed that. We can make it, right?
Hunter asked, finally breaking his game of chicken with the stars.
It's accessible,
Hassin chimed in after peering over his friend's shoulder.
There's nothing, though. Why would this thing you seek be out in the forest?
Someone left it there by accident. I lied. Haja nodded, but his stare didn't waver from my face. I sipped my beer. A mutual understanding.
I think it's time to check out for the night, Hunter,
Tripp said. He was sharing a tent with our financer and helped him to his feet. Hunter groaned and clutched at his stomach. I didn't expect Hunter to be along for the entire duration of our expedition around the world, not after he realized he was too old and too sick to sleep outdoors and sweat in foreign countries. He wore matching white linen pants and a short-sleeved shirt. I'd never known anyone to use a handkerchief, but Hunter's hadn't left his grip in hours. He dabbed his face with it and finally shoved it away. Trip nodded to me before entering the tent after Hunter. I imagined he slept lightly with one or maybe both eyes open. Haja and Hassin did the same, retiring to their canvas tent, and Marcus yawned, finishing his beer.
I'm going to call it too, Rex.
I noticed Veronica was still up, and I decided to keep her company for the time being. I'll be there shortly. It was early, but we had a long day ahead of us, and I was beat after the last few days of travel.
He's a good kid,
she said, indicating Marcus. Smart, too, one of the best students I've had.
He was your student?
She asked. Yep. Until he decided he couldn't make a career in the field, he transferred to something more sensible.
Are you saying archaeology isn't as romantic as it's cracked up to be?
Veronica asked, shifting closer to the fire. We sat inches apart, and she wiggled her knees, bumping my leg every few seconds. I wouldn't say that. There are times. Entering a site for the first time, brushing the cobwebs from the stone archways and carefully treading on the floor, hoping you're not about to set off some ancient burial guardian system. Then there's the bats. She laughed, her blue eyes bright in the firelight. It was a nice sound amidst the jungle noises.
Bats? You're scared of them?
What's there not to be afraid of? Wings, those little faces. Not to mention the movies, I said, feeling a little foolish.
Don't tell me you believe in vampires,
she said. No, I wouldn't go that far.
How about aliens?
Her voice dipped lower, and I saw her glance toward Hunter's tent. Aliens?
You know, beings from another planet.
I don't know what to believe. I do think it's awfully arrogant of us to assume we're the only world with intelligent life.
Are you certain we're speaking of the same planet? In my experience, the aliens would keep flying by. We're waving a sign, nothing to see here.
She smiled again, making me join her. Why do you ask? She wasn't privy to our mission details yet, but she wasn't naive. She knew more than she was letting on.
Everyone's heard about Madison the billionaire's obsession with the unknown. I heard he has quite the collection.
Her lips were close to my ear, her voice barely a whisper. It is impressive.
You've seen it?
She asked too loudly and slid a palm to her mouth. I have. Briefly, at least. I thought of the last time Marcus and I had been in Hunter's study and the threat of violence from Tripp and Francois.
That's the real reason, isn't it?
She asked me. I'm not...
Don't lie. Just tell me. I have a right to know if I'm going to be part of the team,
she said, sitting up straighter. Someone spread out these artifacts years ago. Hunter wants to gather them. It will complete a collection of his, I said. It was only a half-truth, but that would have to be enough for tonight. That seemed to slow her inquiries on the subject.
Was it hard, growing up without a father?
The question came out of nowhere, and I sat still, staring at the dwindling fire.
I'm sorry. Was that too far? I've read up on you, and I know that your father was Dirk Walker. A legend in certain fields, if my research was correct.
Veronica told me. My dad's been gone a long time. It's a wonder why I didn't become a grocery store manager instead of this, but I'm not my father. I'm a professor. Saying it didn't make it real, because at this moment I felt just like him. And I liked it. I was connected to a great puzzle, the same one he'd gone to great lengths to hide. Why had they paid Marta's father to disperse the tokens in these bizarre and remote areas? To what end? Had he been that afraid of someone following him? Had he really wanted to leave us behind with no hopes of reconnecting?
Molding the minds of the young. If Marcus is any proof of your skill set, you should be proud of your teachings.
Marcus was already a special kid. I can't take any credit.
But he's here with you now, on this wild adventure.
She said, he is, but I wish he'd stayed home. I feel like I'm bringing him into something he shouldn't be part of, I admitted. Veronica rose, waving a fly away, and headed toward her tent.
He wants to be here. I only hope you find what you're looking for, Rex.
And you? I asked, watching her crouch near her tent's entrance.
I'm in it for the cash.